Dan, a cleric who recently condemned the Taliban, was killed today by a suicide bomber. He was killed in an attack in his office at his religious school in Lahore shortly after leading Friday services. At least six people were wounded. A separate attack on a mosque in the northwest occurred at about the same time. At least three people were killed in that attack, but authorities fear there could be more deaths. A wave of attacks in recent weeks is blamed on Taliban militants taking revenge for the army's offensive against the Taliban in the Swat Valley. In Iraq, a senior Sunni lawmaker has been shot dead. Harith al-Obeidi was the head of the Iraqi parliament's biggest Sunni bloc. A party spokesman says he was shot and killed today outside a mosque. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Reprise and Duck Records, presenting Eric Clapton and Steve Winwood with their new CD and DVD, Live from Madison Square Garden, available now.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria Restaurant in downtown Champaign. Radio Maria's is now featuring their spring menu, along with tapas, served every evening until 2 a.m. Lunch is served on Friday and Saturday, 10:30 to 2:30, and brunch on Sunday. Information on their menus, wine, and beer lists can be found at RadioMariaRestaurant.com.
We'd like to thank the 111 people who called or logged on and pledged more than $12,000 to WILL Radio during yesterday's one-day fundraising event. Your contributions will help us continue to serve you well in the coming year. And if you didn't get a chance to make a pledge yesterday, you can log on to willpledge.org anytime. And we thank you very much for your support and for making a difference. This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're going to have some fun here in the first hour of the show. Every once in a while on the program, we talk about food and cooking, generally on the first Wednesday of the month. But every once in a while, we take an extra day and we have someone on the show to talk a little bit about, you know, some particular kind of cooking. And this morning, we'll be talking about grilling. Now, I'm sure a lot of folks would say that one of the things they really enjoy about summertime is cooking outside, and it seems to be a guy thing. Well, in the first hour today, we'll be talking with Bob Sloan. He's authored a number of books, including the Tailgating Cookbook and the Working Stiff Cookbook, and his most recent, brand new, out from Chronicle Books, is Dad's Awesome Grilling Book. Techniques, tips, stories, and more than 100 great recipes. And I think there are a lot of really good-sounding recipes in here, and it would be a good thing for somebody maybe who's used the grill for the basics but says, you know, I want to go beyond that, and I'd like to have some good suggestions on good things that you can do on the grill. And there's a lot of good stuff in the book. Maybe as we talk, folks who are listening have comments, questions, stories, recipes to share, what have you, give us a call. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. At any point here, you give us a call. We just ask people to be brief, but certainly calls are welcome. Well, Bob Sloan, hello.
Hey, good to be here.
Well, thanks very much for being with us. I know that primarily, you know, you're a writer. Have you ever cooked for a living?
I had a catering business here in New York City for about 10 years, cooking to the stars, so that was kind of fun, and got to be in a lot of high apartments way up above the city, so it was always a blast cooking in these tiny kitchens. Sometimes people didn't have any utensils or pots and pans because, you know, in New York, people are in their own houses, but we had a great time doing that.
Yeah, okay. Well, and as I said, I'm thinking that, you know, here on the program from time to time, we have talked about cooking, talked about various things, and one of the things that seems really obvious is that grilling is a guy thing. Now, I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe just because it involves lighting fires. I don't know. But it pretty much is a guy thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think dads like the grill becomes, I think, a little oasis for dad in the backyard. I mean, he's standing in his little plot, his little fiefdom. He has his grill, and all the vicissitudes of his life kind of drift away as he's cooking. The grill demands a certain degree of attention, but it also demands a certain kind of relaxation and peace. So I think that's second only to golf is a grilling experience for Dad.
You make it sound almost zen.
Well, it has to be. I mean, you have to let the heat work for you. A lot of guys make the mistake of getting very fussy on the grill. They pat the burgers, they turn them a few times. They don't trust the heat, and they don't let the heat work for them. So I encourage them to just stand back a little bit. So it actually helps to have a beer or a gin and tonic while you're grilling because it just allows everything to happen at its natural pace.
Well, let me ask you the basic question here, and I'm sure that there are people who have strong feelings one way or another about the fuel, whether you cook with charcoal or you cook with gas.
Yeah, it's a great debate, raging in backyards all across America. But my feeling is that I cook on charcoal, but I just want to get guys out there, dads, cooking dinner or any kind of meal for their family. And if it means that the ease and comfort of having a gas grill that just starts right up and heats right up makes them more comfortable being out there, then I say gas is great. You may find as you get more skilled that you want to have a charcoal grill or a smoker so you can do some slow cooking. But for the most part, the gas seems to work great. And like I say, it gets guys out there. It gets them bringing food to the table, smiles from their family. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, well, I guess that the one outstanding advantage of the gas grill is that it's pretty much ready to go in. Well, I don't know how long it takes basically to heat the grill, maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes at the outside. You light it, you're good to go.
Exactly. I mean, if you're, if you got a nice weekend day and you're in no great rush, then the 20 minutes or so to get the coals going. And if you do have a charcoal grill, I really hope that you're using the chimney method for getting the coals started. It's so much easier and efficient and less toxic than spraying the coals with lighter fluid. So if you don't have one of those, it's well worth the $12 or so that it costs to get one.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago, in fact, I started. I'm a charcoal guy and always have been, and forever, pretty much. Like most people, I guess, or like a lot of people, I use the briquettes. And a couple of years ago, I started to use the natural lump charcoal, and to use the chimney to light it, which is nice because I think about all those many gallons of that liquid stuff in previous years I used. So it's nice not to be using that, but I really like this kind of charcoal, and I would certainly suggest to anybody who has always cooked with charcoal but used the briquettes to try it. And it seems to me that it's pretty easy now to find in the supermarket in that same section where they have all the outdoor cooking stuff, and to try it, because I like it very much. I'm not exactly sure how I would describe the difference, but
I
really like it.
It's a slightly hotter fire, and it burns a little faster. So you just have to keep that in mind. But I totally agree. The flavor, is a little cleaner, and it also just has a little bit more authenticity because you're looking at these uneven chunks of wood in there, and it looks like a fire should look. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The other thing that I guess that maybe is the one thing that you got to get a feeling for is how hot the fire is, and because it's not quite as precise. You're cooking inside. You're cooking something in the oven. You turn it on to the heat that you want, and assuming that your oven is accurate, you'll get that. And when you're cooking on top of the stove, well, at least you can get a sense of what you're doing, because you can. Again, my preference is to cook with gas in that case, and that is, well, you can look at the flame, you can sort of see what you're doing. The thing about the grill is you really have to kind of get a feeling for how hot it is, recognize that there are maybe hotter spots and cooler spots, and sort of know how long it's going to take to cook whatever it is you're cooking.
Exactly. It's in a way, it's a kind of a living thing. Each time you make a fire, it's a little bit different than the last time. And you do have to get a quick feel for where the hot spots are on the charcoal, on your grill when you're using the charcoal. But that's part of the fun of it, and then kind of maneuvering things around the grill toward the end so that you get a nice even char on all the pieces of chicken. I find that kind of fun and a little bit of a challenge. And as long as I got a long-handled pair of tongs, everything seems to go really well.
Yeah.
But if you follow the basic rules, enough coals to fill the bottom of the grate plus maybe a few more, that should give you the amount of heat that you need for a nice medium hot to hot fire. And if you just work from there accordingly, adding a few or taking a few away or piling a few up on one side and letting a few on the other, few less coals on the other side, you can build the fire that you want. And it really does work pretty well. The other great thing about charcoal that we didn't mention is that you can cook with the lid off. It's a lot harder to do that with gas because the heat escapes so quickly. So you get to see what you're doing and, you know, have a little more access to what you're cooking.
Yeah. Our guest this morning is Bob Sloan. He's authored a number of books, Dad's Own Cookbook. He's also written The Tailgating Cookbook and Great Burgers and is author of a new one, just in time for Father's Day giving. It's Dad's Awesome Grilling Book, and it is published by Chronicle. And I think it has a lot of good recipes in there. Things that there's a number of things here that look good to me that I would like to try. And other folks, you can check it out. And questions are welcome, or you know, maybe you have a recipe to share, or some kind of question, or some kind of tip.
Always looking for another barbecue tip. You know, it's amazing how you can be doing some for so many years, and then someone just has invented some kind of odd little way of doing it, and totally works brilliantly. So yeah. Anyone out there has one of those, it'd be great to call.
All right, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think that one of the points you make is that if you go to, go to department store, go to places where they sell cooking equipment, there'll be all kinds of stuff that people are going to try to sell you to in the way of tools and accessories. And that I think your point is that most of that you don't really need. You need a few basic things. Like, as you said, a pair of tongs that's long enough so that you're not going to get burned when you're turning stuff.
Right.
One thing, though, that's here on your list I think it's interesting and I had not really thought about was a cast iron skillet for cooking on the grill. Tell me what you can do with your iron skillet on the grill.
Well, you can replicate the heat of the stove. So if you want, you can, make a nice chili. You can make some cornbread. You can do all kinds of stuff in the skillet. And I got a few recipes there, but it seems kind of odd. Okay, why am I bringing my skillet outside? But then again, it is summer. You don't have to mess up the kitchen. You got the heat right there. And sometimes it's just easier. You can also do great side dishes. Obviously, skillet takes up a fair amount of room on the grill, but you can sort of get some stuff finished and then heat up some beans or make a little casserole and heat those up, and it works really well. I find it seems a little funny at first, but as soon as you get used to it, like so many things on the grill, you really get hooked.
What can you want to just give? Is there one recipe that you can give or at least talk a little bit about that uses the iron skillet?
Let me think here. Well, trying to remember where that is in the book. I think you can make the backyard beans I have, which are really fun. And that's you sort of take some beans and canned beans and doctor them up with some sugar and mustard and chili powder and a little cumin. Use three kinds of beans for that and a little sausage as well. So you got something that when you're done with that totally transforms those and makes them a great side dish, something that you could make on the grill right before you cook up some brats and serve the two of them together, or you could make that on the stove in the cast iron pan earlier in the day and just bring it out, heat it up at the last minute on the grill and serve that at the table. That'll be a great side dish. It's something that, sometimes dads totally focus on the steak or the chicken or the pork and then forget that there are other components to the meal. So I try to remind them that that they can do other things as well. Yeah. Like my kids love when I do some new potatoes. I first just parboil them in just in water for about 12 minutes just till they're cooked through. And then during the last 4 or 5 minutes, whatever I'm cooking on the grill, I just throw the potatoes on, even if they get a little messy with some barbecue sauce or some teriyaki, whatever it is, they pick up that great flavor of the grill, and then a little olive oil and a little salt and pepper, and they are just killer. You bring those to the table, and the kids love those just as much as they do whatever else I've been cooking. So,
yeah.
You have a little empty space on the grill, you might as well fill it with something. Ears of corn, you can always break them in half and wedge them in amongst whatever else you got going there. And all of a sudden, you got this fantastic meal.
Yeah, one of the among the many things in the book that really look good to me that I really like to try. Speaking of potatoes, is your recipe for grilled sweet potatoes. Now that also looks really good to me.
Oh, it's fantastic! And sweet potatoes, unfortunately, kind of get relegated to holidays or to, I don't know. People get a little afraid of them. I don't know why, but all you have to do is peel them and slice them and. You got something you can work with, and again, you can pre-cook those and finish them on the grill with a little spices. And again, you're competing with the steak. Even the kids will start loving that as much as whatever else you're cooking.
Yeah, so that just I think the people there they have to understand we're not just talking about taking a raw sweet potato and peeling it and cutting in slices and putting it on the grill. You really do have to cook it part of the way first. And then what you're doing is you're finishing it on the grill.
Right. And that's, that's the kind of thing that I think makes Dad's life easier because he's not kind of running back and forth between the kitchen and not trying to figure out when the vegetables are going to be done. And he can rely on the grill pretty much to finish everything off. And you could serve that with a great salad of some kind, and you got a real balanced, hearty, wonderfully flavored meal. So a little work maybe in the kitchen beforehand, really simple prep on the sweet potatoes, and then throwing them on the grill in the last minute, finish them off. Fantastic.
Yeah, I do, and I do. The beans recipe looks really good to me too, as well. And I think the nice thing about this is that it takes advantage of the convenience of canned beans. So you're just essentially opening the cans and then
Right. Mixing
it together with the stuff that you're flavoring it with. I guess one of my main complaints about there are plenty of canned beans in various kinds of sauces that you can buy in the store. I guess one of my big complaints about those is that for me, they're almost all too sweet.
Yeah, they seem to love to do that, and it makes you, most people come back and buy another can because they're enticed by the sugar and the salt together. But yeah, there are so many more kind of variations on that flavor that don't rely so much on the sweetness to accent the beans. And you get a little actual flavor. I mean, beans have a great flavor unto themselves, and often those are dwarfed by the sauce that come in the canned beans. So I'm using just the plain beans from the can, mixing those together with your own little concoction. And then you can kind of balance off, the cumin and the mustard and get the nice, just the exact flavor that you want.
Yeah, and you're using a combination of kidneys, pintos, and black-eyed peas, but I suppose, whatever kind of beans you like.
Whatever's on sale.
You can use. Questions here, welcome. And also, people want to call in, share a recipe, or they got some kind of cooking tip. We're talking about what I said was, and I think it's true, that for a lot of folks, one of the great things about summertime is cooking outside, and particularly for guys. This is very much a guy thing. And our guest this morning is Bob Sloan, and he's the author of a recently published book. It's titled Dad's Awesome Grilling Book and has a lot of good recipes for cooking on the grill. Chronicle Books is the publisher. He's authored a number of cookbooks, and so you can go down to the bookstore and take a look at them. Questions, certainly. Questions, welcome. Or comments, recipes, what have you. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Something else that I think there's some good, a couple of good things in here is recipes for sauces. And again, that's one of those things where you can't, you go to the grocery store and in that section, I don't know how many there are. There's a gazillion different bottled sauces. And I suppose, some people have favorite off-the-shelf sauces. I do, one in particular that I really like and we use in our house and have for a long, long time. But I think that it's also good for people to know that you can make barbecue sauce. It's very easy. There's nothing to it, truly. And if there are particular kinds of flavors that you really like, you can make sure that you get them in there. And in fact, you have a couple of sauces. And again, I think that there's one that in here that really looks good to me, and I would like to try because it sounds like it has from reading the list of ingredients, that it has a lot of really good flavors in it.
Yeah, I think, hopefully you're talking about the all-purpose Dad's.
That's right. Dad's all-purpose barbecue sauce. That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. That was from years of, massaging the basic mixture one way or the other. And I think I found something that has a great balance of a little heat, a little sweetness, a little tartness. But like you say, you know, this is the kind of thing that you as a dad want to try to create your own so that it becomes not my dad's all-purpose, but your own all-purpose barbecue sauce. And some you can throw together, and maybe even if you don't have all the ingredients, you feature a little bit more of one than the other, and suddenly you got a whole new flavor going on.
Yeah. And this one, it has kind of what you would expect. It has a tomato component, so it's got some ketchup, tomato paste. It's got tomato, a couple of kinds of tomato paste. It has a sort of a citrus thing, so it's got some orange juice. It's got lemon juice. It has a little sweetness. It's got some honey. It's got some brown sugar. It's got some Worcestershire. Got a little chili powder. And one of my favorite things is cumin. I don't think there's anything that ain't improved by putting some cumin on there. And it has that and a tiny bit of cinnamon and clove. And I think all those flavors, to me, that just sounds really good. And I think that would work really nicely.
Well, it does. And, again, it's something that you can serve with the meal. You can also use it during the last few minutes of cooking with a basting brush and keep mopping whatever it is you're grilling until it's nicely thickly coated and good and sticky and red. The kids seem to love that. Just get a roll of paper towels and plop it down right on the table, and you're all set to go.
There is one thing, and you do, I know, mention in the book. You really, and I don't know, people have had bad experiences, but you got to remember that this sauce and a lot of barbecue sauces, they have a fairly good amount of sugar in them, and that's going to burn. So
yeah.
You really, the time to put your sauce on is pretty much at the end, and hopefully by that time you've gotten a good sear on whatever you're cooking. The fire has kind of died down, and maybe you even have deliberately tried to create a little place where it's not going to be as hot, so maybe they're not going to be over direct heat, and that's the time, pretty much right when you're almost done, that's the time that you put your sauce on.
Exactly. No, it's really important, and I try to help Dad see that there's a real difference between what a rub does, a dry rub, what a marinade does, and then what a sauce does. The rub and the marinade happen before the meat is cooked, and the sauce happens just before the meat is taken off the grill. Otherwise, like you say, you just have this blackened, charred, indistinguishable piece of meat that it's hard to tell what it started out as, and you've kind of ruined the flavor of the sauce. So last two or three minutes, keep mopping it, keep turning it. Everything will get a little sticky. The tongs will start getting coated, but that's when you know you're right in the pocket there.
Yeah.
Working out.
I don't know when it was that dry rubs suddenly became everywhere. It seems to me that there was one day that there was no such thing, and then suddenly the next day, everywhere you looked, people were selling them in the cookbooks. They were there in the cooking magazines. They were there. I'm not exactly sure how that happens, although I guess in the food world that sometimes happens. You know, some idea pops up and then suddenly it's everywhere.
Well, people were trying to figure out how do you get this flavor. You know, I'm doing everything right, smoking my meat, but somehow it's not captivating. And then I think when people started becoming fixated on authentic barbecue, and there were a whole bunch of books coming out about, juke joints down in the South and all the local places and the culture, the barbecue culture, and barbecue contests started, exploding all over the country. That's when people discovered, oh, okay, here's where the flavor comes. And it doesn't come from the bottle of barbecue sauce. It actually comes even before the meat is cooked. And the sugar and the salt help kind of draw the flavor into the meat. So, a few hours or even overnight with the dry rub really allows that flavor to permeate. And then when you slow cook it, it just gets in deeper and the meat gets nice and soft and the flavor just inhabits it. So you actually have to, it's one of those things actually you have to be careful with because you can over-season it. You can put a little too much on and dominate the flavor of the meat too much by the rub. So again, it's one of those things that you get a feel for after a while. You start off with a little less, and maybe over the years or months in the summer, you figure it out to get the exact right proportion.
Well, is there a favorite? Do you have a favorite approach to that, this mixture? And just make sure people know what we're talking about. We're talking about a mixture of dry spices, seasonings, could be herbal component, could be include things like salt and sugar, black pepper, cayenne, and a number of other things, sort of depending on what kind of spin you want to give it. Do you have a particular favorite kind of approach?
I like a combination of the sugar, salt, chili powder, and a little caraway seed, a little paprika. And generally what I do is the night before I'll coat my ribs on both sides, wrap them up in plastic wrap, and let them sit in the fridge until the next afternoon when I'm grilling them. So that, I guess it's about 12 hours or so, and that seems to work pretty well. Again, not overwhelming the meat with the flavor of the rub, but just enhancing it enough. So that seems to work for me.
Our guest is Bob Sloan. He's authored a number of cookbooks. He's a writer. He is the author of The Tailgating Cookbook, The Working Stiff Cookbook. There are some others, so you can head down to the bookstore and look for them. And his most recent here, just in time for Father's Day giving, it's titled Dad's Awesome Grilling Book, and that's what it's all about. It has a lot of good recipes for grilling different sorts of things, and not just meat, but a lot of different kinds of meats, and also some recipes for various kinds of approaches to seasoning and sauces, and there's some good stuff in there. So if you're looking for something new, you can take a look at the book. And here, of course, questions are welcome, comments welcome. You got a recipe to share, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Is there just some particular, some particular recipe or something that just right away you'd say, if you were going to try anything, try this?
Well, I'm torn. I mean, I want to say just throw some burgers on because I know that those are a surefire thing, but I figure dads have a little repertoire already that they're really comfortable with, and I'm hoping to expand it a little bit. So maybe if I was moving in that direction, I might try to excite them with the butterflied leg of lamb. I think that just the combination of those few words might sort of send chills down dad's spine. The butterflied thing, the leg of lamb thing, what is that about? How do I deal with those things? But part of that, I think, is developing a little relationship with your butcher. And I think that's something dads should try to do. Even if your butcher's working in the supermarket, probably he knows what he's doing. Most butchers seem to. And they usually enjoy the opportunity to do something besides throw some pork chops in one of those, trays and cover them with plastic wrap. So if you asked him to, say, bone out a leg of lamb for you and butterfly it, they would probably really enjoy that because it's like real butchering. And then once you have it there, it's pretty much just like cooking a steak. So you season it and marinate it a little bit and then put it on the grill 20 minutes or so and bring it to the table, slice it up, and it's something really magical that I think is one of the highlights of our summer whenever we do it. Mm. So that would be something I would encourage dads to try.
And if people, they've heard that term and they're not exactly sure what it means to butterfly a piece of meat, I guess the way I would try to explain it is essentially you're taking something that's round and you're making it into something that's flat. And,
exactly.
And so that it just makes it for easier, quicker cooking.
Well, that now it just has two sides, the bottom and the top, whereas when it's round, you got to kind of deal with getting all of it cooked and keep rotating it, and it's hard to get that center, especially when there's a bone inside. Really, it lends itself much better in that state to being cooked in the oven.
Yeah.
But when you butterfly it, it's a little tricky with lamb just because there are a couple of places that you really don't want to open up because they stay a little thicker. But I give some tips on how to deal with that and bring something to the table where you have some nice medium sections, some nice medium rare sections, and some nice rare sections. So everyone should be happy with that.
And this is, I suppose, maybe people know this technique from taking something where you butterfly it out and then you're making some kind of a filling or a stuffing. You're putting it in there and then you're rolling it back up and tying it and then probably roasting it in the oven. But this is not, this is a different thing where you're just butterflying out and you're using it in the butterflied state.
Exactly. So it takes up most of the grill, but there's still a little room for some potatoes if you want, some grilled corn, and you got yourself a wonderful meal.
Well, let's talk with, we have a caller here. Let's talk with someone in Effingham, line one. Hello.
Hi, I just have a quick question. Could you talk a little bit about using the hickory chips to impart flavor to the meat? You can buy those, I guess, at Walmart or whatever. And,
sure.
You could just comment on that, and I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay.
Right.
Sounds good. Well, chips of any kind, hickory chips or other fruitwood chips, are used primarily for slow cooking, smoking over a long period of time. And what you want to do is a couple of things. For Father's Day, you might want to ask for a little chip box. That's a little metal box that has some holes in the top that can go right over the coals. Or you can just quickly improvise by making a little aluminum foil packet and then poking some holes in the top. So what you're doing is first soaking the chips. The reason you soak them for about an hour is that that way they don't actually burn, but they kind of smolder like wet wood. And that's what you want, is that smoke coming off the hickory chips, because that's where the flavor is. And what you've done is you have a little pile of coals on one side of the grate, and then you put the grill on top of that, and then you put the meat on the other side away from the coals. And the little box or the little aluminum foil packet goes right on top of the coals, and eventually, after about 15 minutes, they get hot enough, the chips start smoldering, and with the lid closed, that smoke sort of is drawn across the grill, up through the meat, and out the little vent, and what you're getting is you're allowing that smoke to permeate the meat and slowly infuse it with flavor. So it's a great way of cooking. It's the classic smoking technique. And it's really essential because that component of the smoke from the chips, the flavor, is what really makes the meat resonate. And just when it falls off the bone and melts in your mouth with that hickory flavor or whatever wood you're using, it's just fantastic.
Yeah. Myself, I'm kind of partial to apple.
Apple is great.
Is a real nice wood for that.
And we're up in northern Michigan for a lot of the summer, so we get a lot of cherries. Cherry wood up there, which is also really good.
Yeah. And what I have done, I guess this is sort of not the approved method, but just to put a little bit of smoke on stuff when I'm cooking, is that I just take some of those chips and put them into a little cup or a little used leftover can that had beans in it or something like that, and soak them for a little bit. And then what I do is just sprinkle them onto the hot coals and just around. Pick a couple spots out of the edges where I know I'm not going to be. Otherwise, if you sprinkle them all over your fire, you're going to put your fire out. But you know, you're just going to go around the edges, and that will give you that will also put a little smoke on it. It maybe not intensely smoked, but it just gives you a little bit more of that flavor.
Well, that's a great idea. I'll give that a try this summer.
Let's talk with somebody in Champaign. This is line four. Hello.
Yeah, hi, David. Great show. Trying to kind of late. Just had two questions, two techniques, really, that I've never done on the grill, so maybe your guests could talk about it, and I'll listen off air. One is this thing with a whole chicken and a can of beer, and I was just wondering if your guest has ever done that, how it works, how long you cook the chicken. I understand you're supposed to insert the can of beer, and whatever happens. And then I have never done ribs on the grill, and I know you have to boil them first, and I just was wondering if you had any secrets or techniques about that. And I'll go ahead and listen off there. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Well, beer can chicken is certainly a favorite summer event at our house. It really does work. It's a little odd at first, but a couple of good things about it. One is that you only want to have half a can of beer to cook with, so that means consuming the first half. That's always good.
Yeah.
You sort of stick the can of beer, insert it into the chicken, and then you open up the legs a little bit so you have a nice little, like a stool with a can of beer, three-legged stool, the beer can and the two chicken legs. And you want to position that kind of in the center of the grill where it's highest, because you need to cover it while it's cooking. And a tendency there one snag is to put a few too many coals in. You don't need a hot fire for beer can chicken. You need more of a medium fire. And usually it's about an hour or so to cook it. What happens is that the chicken naturally bastes itself as it's cooking in that position. Plus, as the beer kind of gets hot, it steams and keeps the chicken moist from the inside. So what you get is a succulent chicken. It's not crispy necessarily like you might like, but it is truly juicy and full of flavor, and it's a great way to cook it. You just have to make sure you have a grill that's high enough to accommodate, because the chicken's sort of standing up, and not all grills will accommodate that. So good luck with the beer can chicken, and it's also a great novelty to, you know, friends come over and they see these sort of chickens almost like they're frozen in a dancing position on the grill. It's kind of fun.
Okay.
And the ribs, you can do ribs in a bunch of different ways. I have a couple of rib recipes, you can smoke them in the classic way, which will take most of the afternoon, which is kind of fun. But the other thing I like to do is to not boil them, but to cook them slowly in the oven, covered in a pan at 350, with some sauce to allow them to begin to get some flavor, and then finish them on the grill for about 15 minutes, mopping them with your glaze at the end to really impart a lot of flavor that way. So that's a great way to do it. You could cook those in the morning, put them in the fridge, and then when you come back in 15 minutes, you'll have a fantastic dinner to bring to the table.
Okay, sounds great. Let's talk with somebody else. This is also a Champagne caller, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thank you for the show today. It's fascinating. I guess I'm a stereotypical American male in that I like cooking on the grill and I like tools. And so I've fulfilled both of those needs. I recently became a devotee of the Kamado cooker. The particular brand I have is the Big Green Egg. But it's a fun grill because you can control the temperature so easily. And
yeah, those are
things,
great. I hear nothing but fantastic reports from those.
Well, it's a different kind of grilling because you can easily let the fire get up to about 700 degrees, or the, mm-hmm. you know, the interior, which is a fun way to make pizzas. That's one of my favorite things now, is to grill pizzas, because you can get such a nice glowing fire going that they turn out real well on that.
That's fantastic. I hadn't heard that you could do pizzas on there, but it sounds perfect. It's a really intoxicating when you start grilling pizzas on the grill, because it becomes your favorite pizza right away. I don't know if you've discovered that, but...
No, I'm pretty much wrecked on pizza now because of that, because you get that little bit of wood smoke flavor, and, you know, unless you go out to New Jersey where they do that kind of thing in these big coal fire ovens, you just really can't replicate the flavor.
No, exactly. And then it stops being so much about the toppings. It's not about a million different toppings. It's really about the combination of the flavor, the crust, and the topping together in a nice balance. So suddenly you find yourself putting on less cheese and less sauce.
Exactly. Our favorite so far is kind of the, I think it's the classic Neapolitan pizza, where it's just some tomato sauce, some fresh mozzarella, and some basil leaves.
Yeah, perfect.
Really outstanding.
Perfect.
Well, thanks again for the show. It's fascinating.
Well, all right. Thanks for the call. Well, okay. Now, this is I have not heard of this thing before, and now I have a picture of it sitting here on the computer screen that I'm looking at, and it looks like something very alien, like it landed from another planet.
It's got a lot of positive things going for it. The green egg, and I don't have one myself, but I cooked on them, and I know my friends who do have them love having it. It is something that you may want to have a Weber or a gas grill in combination with, because it might not suit all your grilling needs, but it's a fantastic and it's not a fussy thing. It's not something that you it's very authentic kind of way of cooking.
Uh-huh. And what I guess I'm still not sure what supplies the heat.
Well, yeah, I think it's down below, and it's so insulated, and it's the way it's kind of constructed is that it maintains the heat at a real intensity there.
Huh, okay. Well, that's interesting. This might see you. Even I somehow managed to learn something now and again there is something that's different and a different kind of piece of equipment. So maybe they can folks can check that out. Other questions, comments, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have about 15 minutes left in this hour, Focus 580. Our guest is Bob Sloan, and he's the author of a number of books, including this most recent titled Dad's Awesome Grilling Book. That's published by Chronicle and has a lot of good recipes in here for things that you can make on the grill. I asked you before about, you know, was there something that you would think of right off to make? And you said, well, at the risk of not seeming imaginative, you were just thinking about putting a burger on the grill. But, you know, there's burgers and then there's burgers. It's an easy thing because all you got to do is get some ground beef and shape it into a patty and there you go. Is there anything in particular, though, that you might suggest to people to do that they would really that would maybe not be real complicated, but they'd be really surprised at just how much better, you know, what an improvement over your just basic plain patty of ground beef is going to get you.
A couple of things. It's surprising how many people forget or don't know to salt the burgers right before they cook them, and a little bit more salt than you may think you want to have on there. Just a touch, and right before you cook it, I know there's this great debate about whether to salt or not to salt before cooking, something about drying out the flavors, but always salt the meat, and always right before you cook, and always throw the salted side down, and then you can salt the side that's facing up while it's on the grill. So just that little bit brings out the natural flavor of the meat, and that might be something. The other thing is to the right shape of the patty. It's surprising how many guys want to make little softballs out of their burgers because they think the thicker they are, the better they're going to be. But really, you want it to be medium rare, and the only way to get that without burning the outside is to have something about 3/4 inch thick. So I recommend a 6-ounce burger. That's a little more than a pound for three, and that seems to work really well.
Okay, on to another caller here, someone else in Champaign. Line one right here. Hello.
Hello, David. I'm just calling back to follow up on the green egg thing.
Oh, yeah.
It is fueled exclusively by charcoal.
Okay, so it is a charcoal-powered thing.
It is a charcoal cooker, okay. And the requirement is you have to use the lump charcoal because of the ash production is so much lower.
Uh-huh.
And it works very well for that. I would say the biggest disadvantage to an egg, and I completely agree with the guest that you need to have another Weber or something standing by for other tasks. I agree with that completely. The biggest downside is it's wicked heavy. You can't pick up a big green egg unless it's the very smallest size. So they're in a cart of some kind that you can wheel around.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is they're rather expensive. It's easy to sink $1,200 or $1,300 into a big green egg setup. So it's kind of those are the kind of the limiting factors.
Yeah, I did the one I was looking at here. I think that it says $1,800, and
yeah.
so not everyone will be able to, you know, not everyone can do that.
Right, right. And it's definitely not something you want to move around a lot. You know, if you're moving every couple of years,
yeah.
They do have a very very small size that you can do that with. But for the bigger sizes, it's sort of the suburbia only kind of tool.
And it's made out of some kind of ceramic.
Correct.
Material.
Correct. It's almost an inch thick, so it's again, it's not something you walk over and pick up and transport. It's very heavy.
That's why it can build such intense heat because it's not going.
Yes,
anywhere.
Right. And then, you know, you get a lot of infrared cooking as a result too, because once that ceramic heats up, you're not just it's not just heat from the fire, but it's heat from the edges and heat from the top and kind of fun.
Yeah, I imagine it probably stays hot for a long time too after you're done.
Yes, and also use actually very little charcoal. It's an incredibly efficient cooker as charcoal goes.
Yeah, okay. Well,
anyway.
Thanks very much. We appreciate
it. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Let's talk again with somebody here. This is line two, and it is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. We have started the last several years grilling vegetables, and there are several things that are just as simple as can be, and we never get tired of them. Asparagus is in season now. Eggplants are coming in. Asparagus spears, just wash them, mist them with olive oil or brush on a little olive oil, throw them on the grill, and then take a pepper grinder and some large grain sea salt or kosher salt, and they're just fantastic. Eggplant, you can just cut into 3/4-inch discs. Very simple preparation. You don't have to wash or do anything to it. And again, a little bit of olive oil, salt, and pepper. And we never get tired of them. And the leftovers sit on our counter and get eaten as finger food as the evening goes on. And then another vegetable preparation that's not very difficult, but a few more ingredients, is when zucchini come in, slice them about a half inch thick lengthways on a mandolin slicer, or if you're good with a knife, a thin strip of prosciutto and some sort of semi-soft cheese and a fresh sage leaf, and then top that with another piece of the
So you got like a zucchini sandwich.
It's a zucchini sandwich. It's
fantastic.
Sort of like a salt and bocca without the veal. You're using zucchini rather than veal.
I love that. I'm going to go right away.
Put them on, grill them on one side, you know, and then flip it. It gets a little slippery sometimes as the cheese melts, but...
And if you wait long enough where I am in the summer, they by August they're giving the zucchini away.
Yeah. I mean,
right on the roadside. Please.
Everywhere, and it's a very tasty way to do them, and it's... minimal preparation, but you know.
And the other thing, what you're saying about the asparagus, one of the great things also about asparagus is they cook so quickly, and a lot of dads, they get so excited when they've got the steak off the grill that they forget that they need to let it rest that 7 to 10 minutes to let the juices, you know, congeal inside and get to that perfect medium rare that they want it to be, or medium. And that's a great time to just throw those asparagus right on the grill. The meat's resting. You still have a little heat left from grilling the steak or whatever you had on there. And so I use that time to get my asparagus cooked through. And the other thing you probably know, the caller, that the asparagus can get a little bit blacker than maybe you think it might want to.
Sure.
But that just brings out the richness of the flavor even more. So perfect way to kind of bring the whole meal together.
The thing I like about asparagus is a pound of asparagus covers, you know, half of our grill. And they're varying sizes and so on, and so you get a range of textures.
Yeah, exactly. Just make sure you do it across the grill.
Yeah, some of them are very limp, some of them are crunchy.
Yeah.
And it just makes...
No, it's perfect. That's a great great comment. And it's forgotten how wonderful vegetables can taste. Peppers are so good. Red peppers or poblano peppers on the grill, just put those on the side. And the other thing we love to do is apricots on the grill, just a little olive oil and salt. And you can char those a little bit more than you think on one side. You really only have to cook them on one side, the cut side. Just cut them in half, take out the pit, and put the cut side down with a little olive oil.
How do you keep them from slipping through the grate?
Apricots are just wide enough to do that. And if you've got some olive oil on them, or even some spray cooking oil, it should keep it from sticking, and it should stay right there. So
the only seasoning is olive oil
and a little salt, and then the sweetness of the apricots does the rest. So,
well,
it's great for pretty much any kind of meat when they're in season. It's just ideal.
So they're coming in. It's a great idea.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, that sounds really good. I suppose if you were really worried about losing control of them, you could put them on skewers.
Yes, you could, but I think there's a little more margin for error than you might think. So, you know, just get them on there in maybe 2 or 3 minutes over a hot fire, or a little longer over a medium fire, and then a spatula takes them right up. And
okay, that sounds good.
On the plate.
Well, let's talk with somebody else here in Downs, line number 4. Hello.
While you're on vegetables, I use one of the chimney cooker heaters to heat the coals.
Mm-hmm. You do the roasted peppers right on that?
I do.
That's great. I know. Why waste the heat?
It's great.
Exactly.
It's
a great idea.
Okay, you
know
that already.
So how, I want to make sure I know what you're talking about. So in the process of getting the coals
started,
you then just take the peppers and just put them right on top?
I put one of those little grates that you can buy for vegetables or fish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Put that on top and then put the pepper on top.
You
Yep.
And as that heat is coming up the chimney, it just roasts the pepper.
Yeah, really fast and perfectly.
Yeah.
Very good.
Fantastic.
Well, I guess that was it. Excellent tip.
Yep.
We have a couple minutes left. Someone's call real quick, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You know, there's something here. I'm looking at the book, and I'm at the burger section, and there's something that I would kind of wanted to plug or at least have you talk about. And this is the kind of thing where I've had one of these in a local restaurant, and it's really good. And I have not ever made it at home, and I'm not sure if I would feel like I would have the gumption. But it's the tuna burger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good, and especially if you like, you know, obviously you have to like tuna, and you have to, if you like the kind of, it has some of the basic kind of Asian flavors in it,
yes.
Things like ginger and soy. So if you like that kind of thing, so now I'm sort of moved to think of, you know, maybe I should take a whack at making my own at home, because those that I've had that have been made by a pro, it's really good. And it may be right off, people would think, wait, what are you talking about, tuna burger? But yeah, trust me, it's really good.
No, they're fantastic. And one really handy tip that I have for cooking any fish on the grill is to use your spray oil and coat the fish, in this case, the tuna burger, directly with, spray it right on the whole fillet of fish or right on the tuna burger, coat it nicely. And that, for some reason, that seems to keep them from sticking better than any other technique. It's not so much the grill. I mean, your grill should always be clean, but you don't have to spray the grill as much as spray a whole side of the fish fillet or the tuna burger generously. It doesn't affect the flavor at all, and it just keeps it from sticking.
This is something that really dogged me for a long time. Particularly, you know, one of the things I like to do is to grill salmon,
mm-hmm.
and I was having this problem with sticking. And then I read, I think it was in a book or. You know, the folks who do the cooking show on public television, the Test Kitchen.
Sure, yeah.
People.
Cooks Illustrated.
Yeah, the Cooks Illustrated people. And they said, well, you know, what you do is you take your grill once it's hot, and then you put the grill element on there and you get it hot. And they said, well, just take a paper towel, take a couple of paper towels, fold them up, put some oil on there, and I just use canola, and get out there with your tongs and wipe down, at that point, wipe down the grill with that.
That works
well. And it was like a miracle. I could not believe it. I thought, man, those people, they know what they're doing there. It really helped. I think you probably also do want to. I would also spray a little oil on the grill and maybe also put a little olive oil on the fish. So go oil all around. But just this wiping down the grill just with a paper towel with some oil on it actually worked really well and pretty much took care of my sticking problem.
Yeah, it's the only kind of hitch to cooking fish. But once you figure out your technique that works, also having a nice wide spatula or a long spatula that can slip underneath the whole length of the fish fillet really helps as well.
Yeah. Well, I think we're just about the point where we're going to have to finish up. I would say I appreciate you giving us some of your time, and thanks to the callers. And I think it's got a lot of good recipes in here. And it's not, I think the nice thing about them is that there are a lot of good flavors in here, but that they're not terribly, terribly complicated, you know.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've been talking a lot of the, you know, ins and outs of the insider grilling, but I really want people should know that this is the book that, you know, can be a beginner book or intermediate book for guys that want to get out there and just have that feeling. Dads really love to be successful at stuff, and this book guarantees that whatever you cook from it will really make the kids
really be good. All right.
Up.
The progeny, yeah. They'll be happy.
They will.
Dad's Awesome Grilling Book by our guest Bob Sloan, published by Chronicle. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Support for the show comes from the Infant Parent Institute, celebrating its 20th anniversary in Champaign. The Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infantparent.com. We are WILL. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. We'll take a break for an update on the markets and news. We'll be back, so stay tuned.
Good morning. This is Jeff Bossert with a look at the markets. At 10:58 in Kansas City, July wheat is at 6:34 and three quarters, down 9 3/4. September at 6:45, down 9 3/4. In Chicago, July corn at 4.33 3/4. It's 4.34 now and down 7. September at 4.42 3/4, down 7 1/4. December at 4.56 1/2, down 6 3/4. July soybeans at 12.63 1/2, down 3 1/2. August soybeans at 11.85, down 1/2. September 11.21 3/4, down 3. July soybean meal at 4.27.30, down 70. August at 3.89.30, down 70. July soybean oil at 37.87, down 33. June live cattle at 80.50, down up 40. And August at 81.67 1/2, up 22 1/2. August feeder cattle at 96.67 1/2, up 30. June lean hogs at 57.10, up 10.